This podcast is intended for investment professionals.
Hello and welcome to our latest episode of LGIM Talks, where we'll be talking about changing climate, changing investments.
This LGIM Talks podcast was recorded in January 2020. All data and opinions are correct as at that time.
So in the space of only a few years, climate change has gone from being relatively a sideline issue, the sort of domain of green groups and environmentalists, to actually being mainstream news. We see something about this nearly every day, and it's really becoming part of the backdrop to our everyday lives. But much of the coverage and many of the conversations around climate change are either focused on consumer behaviour, so how we shop, how we get from A to B, and how we live in general, or they're right at the other end at the state level. So what regulations, what targets, what international bodies are recommending and signing up to. But this leaves a massive gap between the individual and the state, and this gap is where we're going to be focusing our attention today. So we're going to be talking about investors and asset owners who are in this gap and who have a substantial amount of power to influence company behaviour for the future. So we're going to be looking at what challenges they are facing, what pressures they're under, and most importantly, what are they doing and what can they still do? I'm joined today by our client director, James Sparshut.
Hello.
And by our sustainability analyst, Iyanki Daramus.
Hello.
So, James, let's start with you. Could you give us a brief oversight into what ESG means for your clients? What are they thinking about at the moment? Is it keeping them up at night?
Sure. So investors are at different stages of their responsible investing journey, from delivering competitive financial returns to mitigating ESG risks through to pursuing ESG opportunities. I think historically the focus has been around active ownership. So this is where investors engage with companies and sectors on a range of ESG themes. And that absolutely will continue as we move forward. However, there's clearly increased visibility on environmental concerns over the past few years. I mean, you turn on the news any given day and you can see it's at the top of the agenda. And because of that, we are witnessing a significant shift in client approaches to ESG. From what we would historically label as ethical investing has moved towards more financial materiality, with many clients telling me that ESG risks need to be mitigated and should not be ignored. In other words, identifying the winners and losers of the low carbon energy transition.
So it's moved on from a sort of generalised discussion about ethical investing and talking to the companies in which you invest into a more kind of technical risk management exercise, which demands much more precise answers on what you're doing.
Yep, no, absolutely. And probably a good time for Iyanki to expand on that as well.
Absolutely. So we sit in the investment stewardship team, and to some degree we're an interface between the expectations of our end clients and the interest of our end clients. You know, if obviously your clients were pension funds over 20, 30 years, they are literally thinking about some of the risk that might impact their schemes over this long horizon, and which is in the interest of their members. And on our side, we have to translate some of these expectations to the companies we invest in. And that, I think, there's a very interesting parallel shift in our interaction with companies. Being a large shareholder with companies, we have very good access to company management. We have very good access to what, you know, top executives are thinking. And that conversation has shifted. It used to be, like you're saying, that some of the conversation was around doing climate change related issues as a nice to have. You know, you talk a little bit in your annual report about your investments in some local communities. And by the way, I have something about climate change and then something else. But, you know, the conversation is shifting. And our expectations as investors are shifting to what are you as a company strategically doing about this, not on the periphery of corporate social responsibility. So, for example, you're a large oil and gas company. It's not because we care about the polar bears, but because we're interested in the viability of your business model that we're asking questions about climate change now. And that, I think, has changed quite dramatically. We as investors have been active in this space and have been pushing companies for a long time to do it. I think there's a growing chorus of investors who are aligned in their demands. I think we're seeing more asset owners who are interested in what the people are doing on their behalf. And We're definitely starting to see companies respond to this quite a lot. I mean, again, turn on the news today. Just today, if you turn on the news, you might have seen Rio Tinto, one of the world's largest miners, has made a commitment to become net zero by 2050. These things are happening. They're in the news all day. And companies have to revamp some of their business models. They have to think quite deeply about what they're currently doing, what they need to stop doing, and where they need to move to.
Yes, because it's gone from, as James was saying, it's gone from the more general discussions to actually on the company side being a question of whether they're going to continue to be able to attract investors. And if we're talking about long-term large investors, you're talking 20 to 30 years of a client relationship. And if you don't act now, then people will stop giving money to these, well, investing money in these companies at all.
I think we're seeing that, and that's a number of fronts are putting pressure on this. So you can think, I'll give you an anecdote. Again, it comes from a mining company, and the chief investment officer of one of the large mining companies in the world told us in a meeting that he'd had a sort of ESG aha moment, if you like. And he said that, look, last year, over the last year or two, I've started to realize that for me as a company, the benefits of me continuing to invest in coal are outweighed by the downside from all the investors who no longer want to hold my company in the first place. So we're starting to see that. You're starting to see credit agencies. For example, Moody's recently bought a big data provider on physical climate change risk. So when they assess, for example, a municipal bond, they're starting to look at flood risk or heat waves or droughts. Credit rating agencies are buying data providers quite, you know, there's quite an aggressive spending spree in this space. They're trying to integrate some of the climate data into their ratings agencies. You might have seen, you know, Goldman Sachs the other week. They said they will no longer IPO companies that do not have women on their boards. So some of the advisors and the banks are moving. You're starting to see more and more companies setting quite ambitious targets. And it used to be, again, that people would say there are things you can do and it's sort of maybe easy. You switch gas plants to maybe renewables. But there are certain things which are really hard to do. Shipping, air travel, mining. You really can't really do that much about it. Well, actually, you're starting to see companies move in this space. The world's largest mining company has announced an ambition to become net zero by 2050. The world's second largest oil and gas company, and now quite recently, Europe's second largest oil and gas company, BP, made very bold announcements around net zero targets. Airlines, BA owner, IAG, made also similar commitments. The world's largest shipping company, banks. You're starting to see this move. Even some hedge funds are getting in.
So it sounds like there are lots of pressures from all sides, really, on the companies in which large asset owners invest. So seeing pressures from the asset owners themselves and also a bit of change in sentiment from the heads of these companies, realizing that if they want their firms to survive beyond the next decade or so, they have to take some action. But how much of this action is kind of self-imposed and voluntary versus how much of it is actually required?
Yeah, I mean, on the pension scheme side, pension schemes are facing increased scrutiny and pressure from governments, regulators, members, campaign groups, and the general public. And regulation will be the key driver in the near term. We've seen this with the recent rules drawn up by the Department for Work and Pensions requiring pension schemes to clarify and explain their policies regarding how they have considered financially material ESG factors, including climate change and stewardship. But there are also financial and reputational and societal considerations, which has led to the pensions industry becoming increasingly focused on ESG as a potential driver for future success. New amendments to the pensions bill have been debated in Parliament, which could impose mandatory climate change reporting. It could force schemes to think about determining, reviewing, and if necessary, revising targets relating to the scheme's exposure to risks of a prescribed description, so for example, climate. But what we do know is that doing nothing is not an option. And also, you've got the pensions minister being quite explicit with his intent to use the vast pools of capital in the pensions industry as a force for good. The UK is now net zero target, and the minister has been clear that pensions will be playing a massive role in meeting this target. So I expect widespread adoption in the future, and off the back of that, I see regulatory pressure probably falling away. But ultimately, it's about looking after members' interests. As one of my clients said to me just recently, Why would we select an investment strategy that did not have some form of ESG integration?
I think that's really interesting because it shows just how far this has come. I mean, if you look back even just 10 years ago, it's gone from quite a niche issue that people sort of considered if they had time at the end of their board meetings or trustee meetings to actually being much higher up on the agenda with specific targets that they have, that schemes have to report on. So we've talked a bit about the regulatory side for pension schemes, but Iyanku, what are we seeing on the regulatory side for companies that we invest in?
Well, again, we're seeing growing scrutiny on companies, and you could say perhaps it's even broader than that. There's scrutiny on pretty much every single link in the investment chain. So, for example, you might have seen when the UK government announced the green finance strategy last year, there was a statement from all the financial regulators, a joint statement saying climate, they see climate as part of their remit when they look after financial stability or the long-term future of companies. Directors in the UK for companies are already mandated by law to be thinking about the impacts of their companies on society, but this is ramping up. So I'll give you a few examples. You'll have seen the regulator overseeing banks and insurers, the PRA, who's now proposing something quite interesting, which is a climate stress test. We've had stress tests, you know, after the crisis for the banking assets and the insurance assets. Now they're trying to think of different scenarios where either you see runaway climate change happening, which you don't want, but you need to be thinking about that. What happens to the supply chains of companies you invest in, for example, or your municipal bonds if cities are underwater. So they're starting to think about that on the one hand, and on the other to do, a stress test scenario. So you take a more extreme example of more dramatic climate policy coming, and all of a sudden, if we don't plan for this orderly transition to a low carbon economy, you might end up in a situation where you sort of postpone, and then you see really dramatic action. And again, the regulator is asking banks and insurers to start thinking about their own balance sheet and how it would look under these scenarios. And we've been working with LGIM, with our parent company, to do some climate energy model, quite sophisticated, for it to be able to answer some of these precise questions. It's not just banks and insurers, it's auditors as well. The FRC, the regulator, has stated that it now expects auditing firms to be looking into some of the assumptions that go into their planning, how they reflect climate change and long-term viability. The regulators are also looking a bit more on the investment management industry in itself, not just the pension side. So when we engage with companies, when we conduct our stewardship activities, are we really reporting tangible outcomes? How are we reporting about this back to our own end members? And it's moving again. It's not just in the UK. The EU has similar moves. There's part of this broad agenda, the Sustainable Finance Action Plan. And again, it touches on integrating sustainability considerations, into the advice that people receive, into the strategies of investors, into insurance, more specifically into, MIFID or UCITS directive. So again, all the dominoes are starting to fall and every single part of the investment chain is now being forced to step up and show their homework on climate change and sustainability.
So it sounds like there have been quite a lot of developments in terms of quantifying climate risk, building this into strategies both for investors and for companies and targets that they can meet and report on. And as these become embedded in company strategies and what people are trying to achieve over the next decade or so, I guess sustainability becomes increasingly sort of the norm. This will be what people expect. So just thinking about that one step further, Iyanku, maybe you can answer this one. If we're expecting sustainability to become the sort of new normal for investing, do you think that we're ready for this?
I think we should start from what James has said earlier. It's becoming clear that doing nothing is not an option. And I think we can be much more clear that the status quo is unsustainable. Whether we have every single toolkit available, that's a journey by far. But I think we cannot use that as an excuse to not start asking some questions if you're an investor from your asset manager. Be thinking about where you might be currently invested. I mean, one example we'll have seen, the EU has suggested that current financial markets are roughly aligned with a scenario of 3 to 4 degrees of global warming. That's a catastrophic outcome. It's absolutely catastrophic. You might see human forced migration, disruptions across pretty much all aspects of the economy. So that, I think, should be the starting point. We have to get ready. It's not a question of if we are ready. We need to move on this. But the broader point, other elements are falling into place. So we have much better data now. We didn't usually. You're starting to see both individual companies disclosing a lot more and setting targets. And, you're able to look under the hood much more now. in terms of banks lending to green or brown sectors, in terms of oil and gas companies, future plans and CapEx plans. You are also starting to get, you know, machine learning and artificial intelligence, satellite monitoring. We don't just rely on company reports now. We're being able, we can draw on a larger pool of data set, much more sophisticated modeling. That's also helping investors, I think, make more informed decisions. We're not just drawing on what companies say. So that is also moving. Again, you're starting to see, and we haven't touched on this so far that much, but you're starting to see, again, the development of mainstream investment solutions, partly aided by this data, which... Again, we're in a different conceptual space. James alluded to the initial early stages where you're trying to develop these sort of niche, say, impact investing funds, you know, which didn't really have the look and feel necessary for mainstream investors. I think we're no longer in that space. And it's partly coming back to what I've said earlier around what do we expect of certain companies. Some of these expectations around governance or environmental strategy, you can start to codify and, if you like, bake in to a strategy, but it becomes automated. I'll give you one example. If you believe a company should not have the CEO and the chair being the same person, you shouldn't mark your own homework as a chair or a CEO. You can bake this into fund construction, and every company which automatically has this structure is invested less in compared to a relative benchmark. So you're starting to have the toolkit to be able to address it. We might not be there fully, but we have enough to start.
And James, just on your side, I mean, in terms of bringing ESG into everything, almost to the extent that it no longer becomes why should we do this, it's a why shouldn't we do this. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing in terms of progress, in terms of uptake, in terms of questions from your clients on the sorts of strategies that Iyanku was mentioning that bake in responsible investment just from the word go?
Yeah, I think there's been a significant shift. I mean, clients are now asking themselves, should I be investing differently? And they recognise that they have a key role in the transition to a low-carbon economy, encouraging companies to take action on climate change. So clients are regularly asking us, you know, if I was going to, if there was something that I want, how do I express my views? And I mean, Iyanku mentioned it earlier, but there are many different ways of implementing ESG. Active ownership, the approach of the engagement, that will absolutely remain. And I see investors challenging their fund managers, making sure that they're engaging with companies on their behalf. But taking some examples around this shift in the allocation of capital, I mean, you've seen a common approach being identifying carbon-intensive companies and sectors and then taking either an exclusionary approach, reducing or removing fossil fuel reserves and carbon emissions via an ex-fossil fuel or low-carbon strategy. And we're also seeing clients look at integrating ESG information into the investment process, whereby you're identifying and tilting towards the least polluting companies, but then also trying to identify some of those, I suppose, what you could describe as winners as we move towards a greener economy. And then all the way through to impact investing, where you see positive, measurable social and environmental impact that may generate a financial return.
Thanks, James. So having spoken in this session about what large investors, about what companies and about what asset managers are actually doing in the sphere of climate change investment, James, what's your main takeaway for our listeners today?
I think in our view, the scale of the necessary transformation cannot be achieved by divestment alone. This requires sustained, forceful engagement from investors across all sectors of the economy, and it also requires significant amounts of capital. The growing popularity of mainstream investment options, which reward companies taking positive steps towards sustainability whilst aiming not to compromise on performance, is an encouraging first step. And pension funds with a truly long-term investment horizon are uniquely positioned to rise to and lead this challenge. And I think, you know, we look forward to supporting our clients and their members along their journey to a sustainable future.
And Iyanku, what would you say is the main thing to take away for our listeners today?
So I'm sure your listeners will have seen last year the amount of people that took to the streets as part of worldwide climate strikes and protests. And my takeaway would be, when you have, 6 million people on the streets calling for climate action, I think that companies that want to retain these 6 million people as future employees or as customers, or investors that want to retain them as clients, really need to step up on climate change. The good news is that we're starting to have the tools to help them in that.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us. And thank you for listening to Elgin Talks. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. And if you would like to find out more about ESG at Elgin, please read our article on changing climate, changing investments, which we link to in the podcast notes for this episode. And you can also visit our website, where we have a lot more detail on our ESG climate active ownership activities. We hope you tune in again soon.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.